good evening, and welcome to the Cabinet of Fever Dreams. Tonight, a tale of unattended bags, commie blocks, and bright neon. I found an abandoned bag in a Soviet housing project, was originally released February 3rd of 2021, and is read to you tonight by Sam Barlian, with musical backing by Petr Mrdian. If this neon-tinted tale is up your alley, make sure to check out the other stories in the Cabinet of Fever Dreams. New episodes come out every Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday on your podcast platform of choice. With all that out of the way, plug in your earphones, go outside, and search for some unattended bags. You never know what you might find.
Back in the day, I used to live like a king. Every night, I'd drink, screw, scream my way through Prague's old town, and wake up in the evening to do it all again. My life was one giant celebration of hedonistic spirit, and I was at the center of it all. Back in the day, I used to sell coke to tourists. Most of the kids doing their big pre-university Euro trip couldn't tell cocaine from pop rocks, and their understanding of our currency stayed safely in monopoly terms. It was easy cash. All they wanted to do was something wild in the mother of all cities. For a heavily inflated price, I gave them that wild experience. It seemed like life in my rowdy corner of the tourist industry would never go sour, but then, well, 2020. You know the drill. Some guy eats a bat, bunch of people get sick, and then we're all in it together. With the tourists gone and me not eligible for any tour guide compensation, I had to abandon my old life. I had to abandon my cozy flat in the center, the constant comfy buzz, the adventure. Through a flurry of desperation and compromise, I ended up on the edge of town. I tracked down a studio apartment in the Soviet-era housing projects and weaseled my way into a cashier job. The transition from the dim glow of smoky nightclubs to the blaring fluorescent lights of my local Albert's was one long, drawn-out migraine. It's with those lights buzzing in the back of my brain that I found the bag. It was thrown across the railing, outside of the supermarket, resting on one of the glass ceilings of the subway entrance. A stash bag. I was wearing a cashier's uniform, but my old instincts were still firing, strong. I knew that that bag was full of drugs. I spent 2 cigarettes trying to figure out what to do. The police, or God forbid the original owners could return at any moment. But the promise of what was in that bag was too much to ignore. That was free money. Or a fun high. Either way, I was in a desperate need of one or the other. With my cigarette still in my mouth, I hoisted myself over the railing and set out to retrieve the bag. My hands couldn't reach it. With some luck, however, my legs would do the trick. I lowered myself off the railing and started fishing around with my foot for one of the bag's straps. My arms were shaking beneath my own weight, and I wasn't entirely sure how I would get back up, but no one below me was any wiser. Beneath the glass ceiling, scores of folks were coming back from their jobs, and completely unaware, I was making some quick money, just a couple meters above them. After a couple of attempts, I looped one of the straps over my foot, but my celebration was short-lived. The question of how I was going to get back up without any upper body strength came back into sharp focus. The answer was, I couldn't. Using all the finesse my clumsy body could muster, I dropped down to the glass ceiling. For a split second, my heart stopped, the same way it did around patrol cars, but the glass held firm. Beneath me, the commuters continued their shuffling trudge towards home. Above them, I crawled on all fours, dragging my bounty along like a lucky predator. The bag was heavy. The bag was full. I still had about 12 meters to go before the descent, but my curiosity got the better of me. I peeked inside the bag. Without any conscious input, I let out a celebratory wheeze. My instincts were on point. The bag was filled with lightly wrapped packages of powder. That's when the fear kicked in. What I was holding in my hands wasn't some small-time stash that a bunch of kids chucked over the railing while running from the cops. The backpack was stacked. I had taken the property of someone serious. In the cloudy world of the subway entrance below, I could see a figure stop. It extended its hand in the same way that the tourist crowds in the castle did. I was being filmed. I was crawling on top of a subway passage, holding a bag full of drugs, and I was being filmed. I sped up my crawl. A spider web of fractures spread out below me. Another reflexive wheeze left my lips, but this one was not celebratory. This was the wheeze of a terrified infant, trying to crawl away from punishment. Crash! The surface beneath me dissipated into a sharp rain of shards. The floor of the subway entrance met me with the force of a power-blind bouncer. For a second, I stayed on the ground, rendered immobile by my glass baptism, but soon enough, I remembered the bag in my hands. Pain scratched across my body as I stood up. Trickles of warmth started to crawl their way across my face, and my uniform was turning bloody. But a wave of relief washed over me. I could still feel all my limbs, and the figure that had filmed my crawl was most certainly not connected to the drug trade. Before me, phone still in hand, mouth wide open with braces on full display, stood a terrified teenage girl. I grinned for her Instagram story and took off in a dead sprint. It wasn't until the elevator that I registered the horrible stench of the bag. It stank of smoke and booze and sex and vomit. Wherever the bag was sitting before it made its way across the railing was someplace deep in the underbelly. As soon as I came home, I swung the balcony door open so I wouldn't get too nostalgic. As soon as my front door was locked and the bag lay safely in the center of my studio, I was eager to open it up and count my blessings. When I moved towards my object of desire, however, I realized that I was leaving behind a trail of red. No one likes stranger blood on their drugs. A shower and an assessment of bodily damage was necessary. I shed my bloody clothes and started to walk towards the bathroom. Yet as I reached the doorway, I stopped. From the corner of my eye, for a split second, I could have sworn I saw the bag move. While the shower heated up, I watched the stash, waiting for it to move again. It didn't. With vague worries of the bag springing to life and throwing itself off my balcony, I closed my bathroom door and got into the shower. The hot spray felt disgusting on my cuts, but with one turn of the tap, I felt more at home. The water pooling around my feet was filthy with blood and accompanied with fine crystals of glass, but things were starting to feel familiar again. It was all just a cold shower after a particularly rough bender. I was leaking, but none of the cuts were terminal. Once the water went from dark red to light pink, I dried off and threw on a pair of boxers. It was time to check the hole. That's when I first heard it. A quiet gurgle of a sound. A barely noticeable vocalization, but I heard it.
Dada.
Coming from the other side of the door, a children's voice, coated in phlegm.
Dada.
Somewhere in my studio apartment, an infant spoke. Whilst I took my cold shower, the sun had set, but when I opened the door, there was no need to turn on the lights. It shined. The thing that was peeking out of the bag shined, even past the white powder that covered it. The thing managed to light up my entire apartment with a bright glare of neon.
Dada!
In an instant, I was elsewhere. I was back in one of those underground clubs, blood filled with stuff, arms around some Yankee girl, slow, steady bass, dancing lights, hints of rum and coke in the back of my tongue. I was back where I belonged. She leaned over and slurred something about wanting to move to Europe because we have a healthier work-life balance. She asked me about whether I had any opinions on green card marriages. I told her I wasn't swayed, but I didn't move her hand out of my lap. She smiled. Her nose twitched. And then, with her lips brushing against my ear, she whispered,
"Dada."
Her eyes were no longer hidden in the dimness of the club. They shined. They shined of furious neon. The whole club, the whole city, the whole universe burned with that uncompromising glare.
"Dada."
I pressed myself against my kitchen counter, trying to blink the madness away. My apartment seeped into reality with a dizzying violence. Bloody handprints led away from the bathroom. The thing was still there. Crawling.
Dada!
With each syllable of its cry, mucus gathered around the thing's tiny mouth. Its cheeks were wet with spit. It crawled in short, jagged bursts.
Dada!
The whole thing's body shined of neon, except for its eyes. Its whole skin ebbed and flowed with color to the beat of some invisible heart, but its eyes were completely dark. Two big, round saucers of complete abyss blinking in and out of existence through cuts of neon. I pressed myself to the wall to put some distance between us, but the darkness of its eyes followed me.
Dada!
The thing had me cornered between the counter and the stove, but it was small enough to step over. All I had to do was get past it, get out of my apartment, lock the door, and then the problem would be solved. I'd get out of the complex and go check myself in somewhere. No sane person would see those colors. I made peace with the idea that I'd lost my mind.
Dada!
The thing did not like me stepping over it. Almost instantly, it pulled itself in my direction and focused its black eyes on me. The mouth was not so small anymore. The thing's jaw lowered to reveal a sea of sharp razor teeth, drenched in bright music.
Da da.
I already had my hand on the door. I was ready to put this all behind me and seek psychiatric help, yet with freedom from the neon abomination within my reach. I froze. I didn't have my keys. My feet were bare. I wasn't wearing pants.
Da da.
My keys were in my pants, and my pants were by the balcony. That would have to do. With hurried steps, I made my way across the apartment. As I walked, invisible remnants of glass cut my feet, but the slight pain quickly became irrelevant. From across the room, the thing leaped my hand. Like sharp gears made of crushed glass, the thing's teeth seized my fingers. Rows upon rows of jagged needles cut into my skin. I screamed, louder than I've ever screamed in my life. I screamed and I ran towards the balcony. The gray neighborhood of repeating cement lit up in a flurry of color. I flung my arm out into the street below, hoping to fling the abomination into the night, but the neon leech held firm. A coat of hot blood and burning bright spit slid down my forearm. I slammed my arm against the glass wall of my balcony. The thing didn't budge. It simply bit down harder. With the screams in my throat burning me like I was just smoked a carton of cigarettes, I raised my arm again. The glass cracked. The ill-shaped infant dangling from my arm held firm. In a dust of white powder, the abomination turned a horrible shade of purple. Flat chunks of glass were chipping off the balcony. The thing lit up in a stomach-churning shade of green. The howl forcing its way out of my lips hardened into a battle cry. I wasn't screaming for help anymore. I was screaming to gather my strength. My eyes focused on the rusted metal of my balcony railing. Like a horrid karate chop, I slammed my hand against the solid surface. As soon as the thing's skull connected with the railing, its grip loosened. It slid off my hand and dropped down into the bushes below, like a heavy mucus-filled glove. The landing in the shrubbery was barely audible. All that was left were the faint echoes of my shrieks bouncing around the tall concrete of the Soviet architecture. I was safe. Yet down in the bushes, the thing still moved. The thing still shined. The thing still lived.
Nada.
I could hear it gurgle from the depths of the bushes below. I watched the shrubbery twitch and shake under the ever-shifting colors. My mind desperately searched for a plan of action, for an explanation, for any shred of sanity left in the horrible night. Yet before I could steady myself, a heavy series of knocks on my door snapped me back into reality. It was my neighbor, Mrs. Novakova. She was furious about my screaming and threatened to call the police if I ever interrupted her evening news again. I didn't argue. I told her I burnt myself on the stove and would be more careful while cooking in the future. By the time I returned to my balcony, the neon glare was gone. The creature was out of sight, and the only light below came from the dim street lamps. The luminous horror was gone, but its legacy remained. Back in the day, I used to live like a king. Back in the day, I danced through life without a single shred of worry or fear. When I was forced to the edge of town, I thought I'd hit rock bottom, that life couldn't get worse. I was wrong. My change in career was nothing but a nosebleed compared to the pain that bag has brought me. Those blinding colors, those soiling eyes, that crippling bite, they will forever haunt me. Back in the day, I lived a life without fear. But I was only fearless because I didn't know of the things that hide inside of unattended baggage. As I lie here, trying to make sense of it all, I can still hear it. I can hear its cry drift on the night wind like a festering wound. I can see it crawling to safety, waiting to meet me in a moment when there are no metal railings nearby. I can hear it gurgle in a phlegm-coated cry that will never die. It calls to me.
Dada.
The Cabinet of Fever Dreams is written and produced by Mike Jesus Langer and is brought to you by patrons such as Moo, Serafina L, Lucky J. Horton, Alan Rawl, Kus, Bob Kondrick, Chicken Mixer, and Daniel Wengel. If you'd like to join these fine people in supporting the show and get early access to episodes along with a bunch of bonus content, drop by patreon.com/MikeJLanger. That's all for tonight. See you on the next episode of The Cabinet of Fever Dreams.